You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Leslie Wayne. Leslie, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me on.
And where are you now, Leslie? Are you in New York or California?
I am in New York, in New York City, in my studio, in Hell's Kitchen.
And Christmas is almost here at the date of this interview, right? It's next week, so things are buzzing, or I imagine, even in that neighborhood, right?
That's right, they are. You don't want to go across town, that's for sure.
Right. So, Leslie, I know you have a few shows coming up. What are you working on now? What's happening in your studio?
Well, I have one show coming up, which opens on February 22nd at Jack Shaiman Gallery on 20th Street. And I'm just working on hopefully one last painting, which I can finish in time before the show. But this is a new series of paintings that I think reflect more than at any other time in my life the current state of affairs. I mean, I've been, for most of my career, an abstract painter. But I feel, as I think most people in their right minds do, that our political discourse has become so toxic and untenable, and that the impact of this discourse is really affecting our lives in a very real way. You know, climate denial, the war on facts, are all things that are really breaking down our cultural and moral fabric. So I've got two somewhat different but related groups of paintings. One is based on broken and boarded up windows. And anyone who saw my previous show, that would sound familiar. It's definitely something that I'm developing since that time. I don't know, a painting of a broken window or a window where some sort of toxic ooze is seeping through the blinds seems like an appropriate metaphor for my anxiety about the current state of affairs. You know, a painting of a boarded up window is really a future that you can't imagine or that you don't want to picture. The other group consists of large scale shaped paintings of closets and shelves and drawers and their interiors. And they're less menacing maybe than the windows, but they're seen from a skewed perspective of a small child looking into a space that's forbidden or up to a shelf that they can't reach. It's kind of, kind of German expressionist perspective of an environment that's not quite right. Containers are permeable, and our best efforts at safeguarding their contents can really go awry. You know, water can leak in, shelves dislodge, contents can spill out, but I don't know. Closets are also wonderful metaphors. Everyone wants to know what's inside a closet. Closets are a zone of refuge for a child sometimes, or comfort from the outside world. They contain secrets. It's a term used by the gay community to come out of a closet. But also strange things happen inside closets. Doors to a closet can open onto a whole other world, like an Alice in Wonderland. No, I just think that they're very rich with symbolism. And as a painter, they also, they're a platform for lots of different kinds of architectural motifs. So that's great because it's just an endless source of visual information. So, that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, so let's talk about both of those and perhaps that the MTA project too. But to talk about closets first, that's really kind of fascinating. In the Jack Shaiman show that's coming up, there's one image on your website called Heirloom 2017. Mm-hmm. Will the images look like that? Will they be those are shaped canvases? They're shaped often in the form of the closet or the doors opened, and there'll be a series of those works in there?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what they are. The actual shape of the painting is the shape of the object. and so it's really a very much a sculptural painting. And what I've been interested in really pushing since my last show is the relationship between trompe l'oeil and kind of very similitude that, you know, the real buildup of the paint itself to create an illusion of something that exists in three dimensions. So you have, until you really get up close, you kind of don't know whether you're looking at an illusion or a real object in space. So,
right, and that seems to, right, but between the shaping of it, right, and mm-hmm. what it is, this closet, this space that you can enter into, mm-hmm. it creates, I mean, as you're saying, there's trompe l'oeil there, but also there's, as you were last talking about, a closet is a kind of a magical space, a space that draws in, you know, certainly children, you know, just looking at the image, you have that feeling if you want to go into it and discover secrets. That's kind of a fascinating matching, because that shaping of the canvas allows us to have that effect where we feel that we want to walk into the painting, which gives us a different relationship to the content in there, right? I mean, because we have to kind of wonder, at least on some level, why do we want to walk into this painting?
Right. Well, also the scale of these paintings are much, much larger than I've worked in a very long time. And so they really are human scale. You can imagine walking right into the painting. So, yeah, I think that's something also that just pulls you in naturally. It's the human
scale. And that's fascinating. And I want to talk about the other series. But before we go on to that, this series, in relating to it, as you were saying, the kind of you know, anxiety of this era, of this president, really, you know, all the things you mentioned, you know, the news, but also, you know, an atmosphere of intolerance, of really bullying, right? From the top down. Do you feel the closets, I mean, I don't want to read too much into them, but also relate to that kind of content, is the anxiety a little bit different, like, you know, the closet disorganized, I've got to organize this. I'm trying to get at the kind of the content in there, because there's so many layers of themes that we could kind of explore in terms of magical or mm-hmm. you know, darkness or what's hidden in the closet, et cetera.
Well, I don't know. That's kind of an interesting psychological take on it. Maybe I am trying to put things in order, although if you look inside, things are not orderly. They're really... they're burning up, or they're falling apart, or they're spilling out. So I don't know. I think it's probably less trying to order them and more kind of a reflection of how I feel things are. I'm not quite sure where that came from. You know, I think that... you know, all these narratives and metaphors are definitely there to read, but there's an underlying truth, I think, which for every artist whose work depends on process more than planning, which has been my way of working, is that the driving impetus of changing your work is more often than not, not the result of kind of a deliberate blueprint for a specific outcome, but it's usually something unanticipated. You know, an encounter with another work of art, you've made a technical mistake in the studio, or you've read something and something, you know, strikes you in a book, or maybe a deeply personal event. I think these are all things that kind of, you know, collide to affect what you're doing, and more often than not, I feel the longer I work, the less I know at the moment, and really only realize kind of what I'm doing when I'm able to stand back and kind of see the whole body of work as a whole. And
let's talk more about that body of work. I mean, just to touch on what you were just saying, you know, process as opposed to planning, The closet imagery does specifically look like planning to me. So let's talk a little bit about your process and how you move into something like that, because the canvas is shaped and though there's all these other things happening in there, it's a somewhat ordered and, you know from the beginning that it's going to be a shape like this. But, as an abstract painter and previously, I understand the idea of process leading the way as opposed to planning, but that's also the case with these closet
Also a little bit of both, but there's no question that these things take a lot of planning. First of all, obviously, the shape of the painting determines, you know, what the architecture of the image is going to look like. And then I would say that, you know, from there, no matter how much I kind of have a picture in my mind of what I think it's going to be, it is, you know, just absolutely changes in the process of tying things out. You know, in that painting, actually, Heirloom, I had a very specific idea of what I wanted to put on these shelves, and just wasn't working. And so I had to revise several times before I came to that resolution. So there is a lot of, unanticipated things that happen along the way, but it's not the same kind of process, I would say, that I've been used to when I've worked exclusively abstractly, where really the manipulation of the paint determines the image.
Right.
I would say maybe the connection between my earlier abstract work and this work is the idea of a threshold, that I'm always looking at what's kind of on either side of a threshold. So when I, you know, would apply very thick layers of paint and kind of peel it back, it's that kind of little hide and seek or a little, play with what, you know, what I'm revealing and what I'm hiding. And
right.
Yeah, it's just
yeah, that's
manifesting
good.
Itself in a different way, much more pictorial way with this new work.
And let's talk about the first body of work that you mentioned too, the boarded up windows, because there seems to be a closer relationship there, perhaps between process and planning and also abstraction. But are those also shaped canvases?
They are, but a little bit. They're much more subtle. I mean, most windows are just rectangles anyway. But with these, they're slightly narrower at the top than they are at the bottom to give just that feeling more than actually a recognizable appearance of you as a viewer looking up into them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. And of course, the content in these is, you know, very different than the closet, as opposed to a space that you feel that you could crawl into or reach into.
Mm-hmm.
The windows are really the opposite, right? A boarded up window is a powerful image. I'm not sure what that conjures for me, but it's kind of a stop. You can't go any further as well.
Yeah.
Well,
I think we've been inundated with those images, you know, since Superstorm Sandy. I mean, all the climate disasters that have been happening, and all you see are pictures of, you know, homes that have been flooded and windows that are boarded up or broken. And it just points to a rather ominous future unless things change fast.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Christmas is coming.
I'm sounding awfully bleak.
No, but I saw the other day when someone posted on Facebook, you know, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. And, you know, and posting below that, and I never really follow, you know, or read Facebook too much, but it said it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, and it was Trump Organization dissolved, you know, Trump's in enormous trouble.
So,
you know, that
scary.
Could be our Christmas.
Be a future after all.
And before we go, I want to talk also about your MTA project, because that was recently unveiled, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. That was just a tremendous experience that I never in a million years thought my work would be appropriate for. But it was it's a wonderful selection process, because they're open calls. Anybody can apply. But they, unlike every other public art project that you apply for, you don't have to have prior experience. So really, they're just looking to see what you do, what your work is like. And based on that, They will or will not invite you to come in, and you are brought in with several finalists, and we're all asked to, basically told where the project is going to be and asked to submit a specific proposal. So my station is at Bay Parkway in Brooklyn on the S line, which is very close to Coney Island. And when we were asked to put the proposals in, they said, you know, get to know that neighborhood so that when you design your piece, you can really speak to the demographic and really talk about how your work will, you know, relate. I didn't know at the time because we were given sort of a general, because all those platforms are identical on that line. And so they just say, you're going to have a platform like this. But I didn't know at the time that my specific station would be overlooking a huge cemetery. So really all of my commuters are dead. But at the time, I just thought, well, you know, my work does not address cultural issues. I mean, at the time, this was before I started this new body of work. And I just thought, well, what is the one thing that everybody has in common? And that was the proximity to the ocean. So my design is based on kind of underwater coral-like shapes that are very, you know, sea-like. And so that
was... It was called Neptune, so you called it Neptune's Garden. Is that correct? It is
yes,
like an underwater
mm-hmm.
garden of sorts. And mm-hmm. and so that's multiple panels. How is that put together? It looks like paint. I can't imagine that's mosaic. Is it on glass?
It's glass. It's a laminated glass. And with the MTA, again, unlike maybe some other public projects, you know, you're not allowed to make the work. You don't make, not that I could anyway, make the work yourself. So they have a whole list of vetted fabricators that you can choose from. And I knew that because my design was about water, I wanted it to have a kind of transparency and luminosity like stained glass, which is not something you get easily or at all with a digital panel. Most people end up having their designs printed, but I decided I wanted to have it painted. And there are three fabricators in Germany who have been doing this for generations. So I ended up with a company in Germany, and I chose them because they also did the Richter window at the Cologne Cathedral, which is absolutely magnificent. So
wow.
I thought, well, these guys know what they're doing. And they were amazing. So I went there.
Yeah, there's so many colors. There's different marks in here and all kinds of
right.
different work. It's hard to understand what laminated glass even is, let alone how they translated
that. It's two sheets of glass that are, I mean, that they're, I think there's actually space between them. So they're not laminated the way we say, they're not glued together. But they are two sheets of glass. And what these guys did at Derek's Art Glass near Frankfurt was I gave them a digital file of the original work. And then they blew it up to full scale. And then they simply put the glass, the whole sheet of glass on top of it and hand painted in enamels that then get baked into the glass. So the color is fused. It's not, it can't be scratched off or damaged.
It gets baked onto one sheet of the glass and then another sheet is put
and
over
then they
it.
Do they have then they put a second sheet and they were just brilliant in choosing which areas they would paint on which sheet of glass so that there really is a sense of depth of things that are behind or in front of other shapes. So, it was just brilliant. They did a fantastic job. And
wow.
If you come at a certain time, like if you come in the afternoon when the sun is setting to the west, it casts just this amazing reflection onto the platform and the stairwell of all these little jewel tones from the design. Yeah, it's really great.
That's wonderful. Yeah, that's so exciting. I mean, to do a public work. I mean, the other work that we're talking about that you've made for years, of course, you know, may end up or is in collections, museums. That some are public, but to be in a space where there are hundreds of commuters or thousands seeing it every day, that's
exactly.
And a different medium. That's a whole different way
mm-hmm.
of interacting with the public.
Mm-hmm. It's a whole another way of thinking that I never imagined. And actually, just this past summer, I was in a show up at the school in Kinderhook. You know, Jack Shaman he bought a high school several years ago in Kinderhook, and I think what was really initially meant to be storage and an installation space for very, very large works, like, you know, like an Ellen at Sui, but he doesn't have room necessarily to install in the gallery, has kind of turned into a monster, because now it's really like a Kunsthalle. Just, you know, it has regular programming, and people come year-round to see the shows. He has two installations a year, one in the summer and one in the fall.
I've never been up there. I've heard about that in Kinderhook, right? So it's a high school, which I imagine is something. I mean, I'm sure it's not as big as kind of PS1, but it's that kind of a building, right? With
Exactly. And in the center, where the gymnasium was, they blew out the ceiling or the floor of the second level. And so the ceiling goes, you know, like 50 feet high. So it's really a place where just enormous installations can be put up. And then on the second floor, there are all the classrooms, which are exhibition spaces. So in every room, it's sort of like a mini solo show in each classroom. But yeah, it's really amazing what he's done up there. So I had... three paintings that are actually going to be in the upcoming show that were in the boys' bathroom, actually. And that's the boys' bathroom and the girls' bathroom. He decided not to renovate the walls. So they were exposed kind of powder blue walls that had a lot of markings on them. And it just made... Conceptually, it made sense for the windows, and visually, it just looked amazing. It was really an interesting installation. I lost my train of thought. I brought up the school because on the north and south side of the building are these very, very tall windows that span the two floors at the stairwells. And I decided to do an installation on those windows, really from having done this MTA project. I never would have imagined that I would do something like that had I not had that experience. So I did basically a design of broken shards of glass, as if those windows had been broken. And in this case, obviously, I didn't paint them on. I had them printed on vinyl that then got applied onto the windows. So, it was a fantastic experience and really fun to do. And, again, sort of expanded my vision of what, you know, what could be possible for me going forward.
So during this next show, there won't still be work up in Kinderhook, or will there be?
No, that installation has come down. There's a new one that opened this in September. But
Leslie,
the three window paintings that were up there are being brought down for this show.
Well, Leslie, I wish you good luck with this next show. I'll be coming to see it. And I want to ask you the last question, which is, I'm always curious what everyone's reading. What are you reading at the moment?
Well, I just bought, so I haven't quite dug into it yet, a book called Heidegger Among the Sculptors by Andrew Mitchell. I saw it at a friend of mine's, Elise Siegel, who's a wonderful sculptor herself, and it looks very intriguing, and I didn't know about it. And my work is very sculptural, so I thought I would check this out. So that's what I'm about to read.
Very good. Leslie, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.